final hour. I am Jim Rome, broadcasting from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Chad Bettis of the Rockies is coming up in 15 minutes. You probably know his amazing story. Look forward to touching base with him. David Cutcliffe is the head football coach at Duke. He joins us at 40 past. A quick thing that I want to get to, and I mentioned this yesterday. Big news in the jungle. Early next week, I am debuting a brand new podcast. It's not like the one we have right now, which we're going to keep in its same place. The one we have right now, the Daily Jungle, is repurposed material. So what that is a fancy way of saying that it's the jungle cut down. It's the jungle dialed back from 3 hours to 30 minutes or 45 minutes. And it's for people that can't hear the show or miss the show or maybe can't find the show at all. So it serves its purpose. It's a good thing. But I'm going to go next level with it. We are going to have a brand new podcast which drops next week. And it is not repurposed or repackaged content. It's fresh, original content. Content that you have not heard yet. Content that you can only get in the new podcast. Content that I can't do on the radio program. So you want to check out the all-new Jim Rome podcast. It drops next Tuesday, August 29th, on iTunes and Google Play. Look for that. It's going to start off once a week, but exclusive, fresh material, not repurposed. So I'm fired up on that. That's coming up next week. Look for some more long-form interviews and some other rants, other takes, other types of things that we're not doing here. Meantime, it is fight week. And now we're less than 5 days out, finally, from Mayweather-McGregor. And just when you thought that maybe Floyd had this fight in the bag, maybe, drama erupts with the money team. And by drama, I mean like teenage drama. Let's just say that money is bent. Why is he bent? Why don't we start by looking at the things that he's not bent with, not bent about. Because once I get that out of the way, you'll be even more shocked by the thing that is bothering him. Like, he didn't have an issue with Conor saying this.
The roses are 2012 outside. He is f***ed. There's no other way about it. His little legs, his little core, his little head. I'm going to knock him out inside 4 rounds. Mark my words.
Now, for some reason, that didn't bother Floyd very much. Not that. Nor did this.
What the f*** is he wearing? He looks like a little breakdancer or something, a little 12-year-old breakdancer. What the f***? He's 40. You're 40 years of age. Dress your f***ing age. Carrying a school bag on stage. What are you doing with a school bag on stage? You can't even read. 40 years old carrying a school bag. The man doesn't even read.
Absolutely incredible. I mean, like some of the strongest smack ever. But even that did not bother Floyd. Floyd did not have an issue with that. Nor did he even have an issue with this.
50 strippers on his payroll this man has. What the f*** is he doing with that strip club? What the f***? 50 stripper f*** on his payroll. Shout out to all the stripper f*** on his payroll. At least Rob Kardashian only had one. He has 50.
I mean, Conor's winning all these rounds 10-8, 10-8, 10-8, 10-8. But apparently it really didn't bother Floyd. He's not mad at Conor, I don't think. But he is mad. Money May is mad, apparently, at Justin Bieber. And if this report is to be believed, and it's true, he's mad because Bieber unfollowed him on the gram. Seriously, per TMZ, Biebs unfollowed Floyd on Instagram as part of him resetting boundaries with Floyd, whatever the hell that means. And according to sources, and again, not my report, but TMZ, according to sources, Mayweather went, quote, insane, nuclear, end quote. Welcome to 2017, where a guy who punches people in the face for a living is sad because some pop star isn't seeing his Kelvin or Valencia filtered pictures on the internet anymore. I mean, how 2017? I don't know. I can't imagine back in the day, 5 days out from the Thrilla in Manila, Muhammad Ali going nuclear or insane because David Cassidy unfollowed him on Snapchat. Like, I'm not going to say that I don't get it to some extent, that I don't understand this on some level. Biebs is one of the biggest celebrities on the planet. You'd be hard-pressed to find anybody bigger on social media than Biebs. This guy's an obvious influencer. You'd love to have him in your corner, or at least on your list of followers. Getting unfollowed or blocked by a guy of that magnitude might even sting a little. I get that. Kind of, I guess. I mean, I can even remember in the early days of Twitter, unfollowing a couple of colleagues of mine, and the truth is, I don't think our relationship is even the same right now as it was then over an unfollow. People act really weird over stuff like that, like I broke up with them or something. So while I think it's pretty lame to react in a manner like that, it's certainly not unprecedented. I don't know, maybe Floyd can hit the Biebs up with a pre-fight note asking, do you still like me? Check yes or no. I mean, Floyd, you're one of the baddest dudes ever. You're an undefeated world champion. If there's any truth to that report, it's not a good look. It's like teenage drama. He unfollowed me. I'm going to go nuclear. So add this to a list of non-stories that we've been force-fed in the final days leading up to the fight. Then again, it only plays into what I've been saying the last couple of weeks. Nothing but non-stories and fake news now. We need this fight to happen yesterday. But it's still just Tuesday. We're going to need something a hell of a lot better than Biebs unfollowing Money May and May going nuclear to get us to Saturday. Come on, clock. Hurry the hell up. Hurry up. We need this fight to happen yesterday. Enough already. That's the story of the day. Biebs unfollowed May. He went nuclear. And it's only Tuesday. What the hell is Friday going to look like? What's going to get us there? Nothing good, I can tell you that right now. Who wants in? Phone lines are open. You could get right through right now and up on the air if you're good enough. 1-800-636-8686. The other Tiger angle. I said it's really not his fault. If you missed hour number one, I talked about Tiger Woods and the fact that there were some nude pics that were stolen from Lindsey Vonn's phone, and now they're posted, and all the people, all the celebrities that had those pics leaked are lawyering up in a big way. And I said that'd be a real easy way to pile on Tiger again and crack him while he was down, but it's not his fault. This guy's an actual victim in this case. He's a victim. That is not his fault. I mean, some of you might see that as another opportunity to blast Tiger or to crack on Lindsey Vonn, but don't get it twisted. Again, this is a crime. A disgusting crime. A crime that should be punished by a hell of a lot more than 18 months in jail. Because scum does not begin to describe the person or the people who spend their time hacking into iCloud or Gmail accounts to search your most intimate and embarrassing photos and then leak them to the public. I mean, the creep that breaks into your computer or your phone is as bad as the felon who breaks down your door. So I know I've taken my runs at the cat. For that 5-pack of pharmaceuticals that he gulped down before getting behind the wheel. For the nonstop spin when it comes to his injuries. For being a bad husband and a cheapskate. But calling Tiger or Lindsey anything other than victims of a crime, a really, truly scummy crime, would be wrong. I mean, nobody deserves that. And no, it's not as easy as if you don't want that to happen, don't take nude pics. Whatever. They were on her phone. She didn't sell them. She didn't leak them. Somebody went into her phone and stole them. That's a crime. Last guy did that got a year and a half. And you should get more than 18 months for something like that. All right, so I'm going to clear him of that, but not of his take involving the solar eclipse. 1-800-636-8686. You know, we've had a pretty bad run with calls from Maine lately. Christian and Mitch, both from Maine. Maybe this guy gets us back on the right track. Let's go to Maine. Brian in Maine. Hey, Brian, good to have you on the show. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm great. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a 37-year martial artist in Shotokan karate. And, a Floyd-Connor situation is going to be really a simple situation. First of all, Connor is a type of guy that's going to play the games. He's going to get him intimidated. This thing is not going to go more than a round or two. Conor's going to take Floyd down so fast and furious, and it's just because you just don't put a boxer against somebody with that kind of mentality. The training that these guys have is just immensely different than the boxer. So, you know, I don't have a lot of money. Hell, I don't have much money at all, but I'm going to say one round to two rounds, Conor's taking Floyd to the mat.
Well, he's taking him to the mat or he's going to knock him out. There's a difference because he can't go
to
the mat.
No. Let's not confuse. I'm not talking about using, you know, MMA. He's going to knock him out.
Okay.
This is a TKO or a knockout in a couple rounds.
Okay, now, you know, the point you make one point that I think is really fair and valid and important. Mayweather has seen every kind of boxer, but he's never seen anybody like Conor. Conor's coming at it from a very different place, physically, mentally, and in terms of his discipline, his fighting discipline. So Mayweather's never seen anything quite like this before. But in order to take him down, he's got to land. He has to hit him. And Mayweather may not have fought in 2 years, but when this guy was going, and he might be 40 right now, and there might be rust, and his reflexes might not be what they used to be, but when he was on top of his game, and even when he wasn't, he was still a nearly impossible guy to hit. So I understand that when Conor hits guys, especially with that heavy left, guys go down, guys go to sleep, guys don't wake up. Just as I understand that Floyd doesn't get hit. He's one of the most gifted defensive boxers ever. Hand speed, his footwork is impeccable. Yeah, he's a great defensive fighter. And people hate that because it's boring to see, but he's an unbelievable defensive fighter. The best that Conor can hope for is that he comes at him with some crazy, unorthodox angle, and he catches him with that one good shot, and he could finish him. And he has to hope that Floyd is not what he used to be. That Floyd is 40. That Floyd is rusty. That Floyd maybe takes a chance that he shouldn't take. But I've never seen any evidence of that. Floyd just doesn't do that. He doesn't take unnecessary chances. He doesn't take unnecessary risks. This is why, for a guy who's 49-0, he's constantly criticized. And some of the criticism's not fair. But what he's done with his whole career, he's been very smart about this. He waits and waits and waits and then fights guys who are not necessarily what they would have been when he should have fought them. That's actually pretty smart. What I'm trying to say here is Conor's going to do everything he possibly can. He's going to be in unbelievable shape. The stage and the arena is not going to be too big for him because the bigger the stage, the better he is. But you're asking him to do something that he's never done before. And it's hard to see. Honestly, it's really hard to see it happening. But that guy's coming from a martial arts background, so of course he's going to say Conor's going to win. Now, if he can land that shot, if Floyd gets careless, if Floyd's rusty, if Floyd starts slowly, if Conor goes in and he can land a shot or two and get him in trouble, then there's a possibility. I'm skeptical whether or not he can land that shot because some of the best boxers ever haven't been able to touch Floyd Mayweather. But I'm not going to miss it. Hell, if that one thing does happen, I'm not going to be the only guy to miss it. I've already bought it. I'm all in. I paid for it. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so we're open right now. I'm supposed to talk to Chad Bettis next segment, but he might be running a little bit late, which means there's a line open for you. Can you make any argument for Conor McGregor? Do you think he can win that fight? What do you think Floyd's going to do? There's also this hype now that Floyd is partying and that Floyd is in strip clubs and that Floyd's not getting his work in. I don't buy that either. I mean, I know he likes to club. I know he likes to throw a lot of money at it. I also know that this guy has always maintained himself in impeccable shape. I mean, say what you want about the way he does it and how defensive a fighter he is. This guy's always in shape, always prepared, and always ready to go. I can't imagine in this as big a fight as he's ever had that he wouldn't be ready. It's just not the way that guy's wired. Like him or not. All right, we're coming right back. And when we do, we'll see. Maybe Chad Bettis. Or maybe a telephone call or two.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
All right, programming update. Chad Bettis is not going to make it today. They've got a scheduling conflict, and it just didn't work out. So we're going to reset that. We'll reschedule that one. David Cutcliffe still booked for next segment. So with that segment opening up, you've got a chance to give me a call. You know, one more thing about Tiger Woods. We talked about the nude pics. It's not his fault. But I'll tell you what is his fault. His reaction to the solar eclipse. Safe to assume that nobody had a worse solar eclipse than Tiger Woods. And that's saying something considering Odell Beckham went from staring at the eclipse without any eye protection to barely avoiding a season-ending injury in a preseason game last night. But that's still nothing compared to the cat. So let's start first with this dude's Instagram account. The official at Tiger Woods Graham. 151 posts, 900,000 followers. It's a big number. And my man got in on the eclipse social media frenzy yesterday, just like everybody else. He even posted a pic of the event. But it wasn't the dime a dozen picture that he grabbed. It wasn't that at all. It was the caption that he added. The caption being, quote, "My daughter Sam took a pic from her phone while we were in Tennessee for the eclipse. Hashtag Eclipse Solar 2017. Hashtag Eclipse Solar 2017. You ever wonder if these celebrities really do their own tweets or posts? Assume that this guy does, because nobody else would have gone with that hashtag. Hashtag Eclipse Solar 2017. I know what you're thinking. No, I'm not the one who got all dyslexic with it. No, I did not misspeak. He really went with hashtag Eclipse Solar 2017. Eclipse Solar. Uh-oh! Hey, Kat, the entire point... Thanks, Avi. Way to get that in today. The whole point of a tag hash, Kat, the entire point of the tag hash is to increase visibility of your post. It's to put your content in front of people who aren't following you but are searching for trending items. Your Eclipse Solar 2017 hashtag now lives with only 5,800 other posts on the entire Instagram platform. If you had just gone with the more grammatically correct number one trending hashtag in America yesterday, your pick would have been on the first page of 800,000 other related posts right now. Hey, but I get it. Your mind is on the course golf. And I also get that media social is not your suit strong. Next time, just let your daughter thumb out the caption and the hashtags. And if you're wondering when that next time is, Kat, scientists say only 7 more years until we see a total eclipse solar again. I mean, I see a story like that and I have one reaction. Eddie in Santa Paula tweets, "Biebs unfollowed Floyd. How am I supposed to continue my day?" It's not you, Ed. From the report, it sounded like Floyd had trouble continuing his day when he saw that. If he, in fact, went nuclear. And that was the quote. At SA Sports Honk tweets, "Damn, Jim. Some people act like little bitches when you unfollow them. Sincerely, Kyrie Irving." And Mike D3 Football tweets, "Bieber's social media prowess isn't anything to joke about, Rome. Regards, Chris Paul, retweet beggar." He didn't make the All-Star game. Can't beg for retweets. Just can't do it. Eclipse Solar 2017. That'll happen. Happens every day.
Happens to us all.
Let's go to Jeff in SoCal. I've got time for a phone call because we lost our interview. It opens up a window. It's good to have you, Jeff. What's up? How are you?
Rome, I'm great. Hey, man, I'm really excited for this fight this weekend. I love it. Anyone that's hating on it does not respect it for the event that it is. MMA versus boxing. I say, Jim, why stop there? Let's have the Warriors play the Patriots. Let's have the Cubs play the Penguins. Let's have Jordan Spieth play Roger Federer. And, of course, the ultimate matchup, the creme de la creme. Let's have the UConn Lady Huskies play the Florida Gator softball team in some sort of sport. I don't care what it is, Rome, but I'm good for 100 on that pay-per-view.
No. You don't like that car.
I don't like that car.
No, you're not, Jeff.
Not a very good car.
You're not, because I know what you're about. I know your brand. And I know you're not good for that. You know, he made kind of an interesting point that it makes about as much sense as Golden State playing the Patriots in football. Yes and no. We are talking about two totally different sports. Different sports. Not different disciplines, different sports. Connor is trying a different sport, but as part of his sport, there is striking. So it's not a matter of a basketball team playing a football team, but MMA is not boxing. They are different sports, but as part of Connor's sport, he does strike. So it's not as far-fetched as all those things. Listen, if you're Connor, why the hell not? Why the hell not? You're making $100 million. He might decide at that point he doesn't want to fight anybody ever again. Not Floyd, not a bear, not Nate Diaz, nobody. He could walk off on that $100 mil. You have to dial back some of that spending, but he could walk off right now. If you're Conor McGregor, you have nothing to lose other than him going out there and completely embarrassing himself and it being totally one-sided and Floyd beating the hell out of him. He's got nothing to lose here. What the hell? He could just go back to being the biggest thing in MMA. And as I mentioned yesterday, MMA fan doesn't even care. MMA fan is used to MMA fighters losing. Everybody loses. Conor lost. Ronda Rousey lost. The best, the biggest and the best get beat. Everybody loses in that sport. So if Conor loses here, who cares? Hey, Diaz got him. He jumped right back in the cage and beat him. He's got nothing to lose. Floyd's got a lot to lose. If Floyd loses, that's embarrassing. If Floyd loses, there goes his perfect mark. If Floyd loses, it's the ultimate black eye for boxing. He's got a lot more to lose. But then again, what's the risk, really? He's fighting an MMAer who has never boxed professionally. Blaze and KC. Blaze, I don't know how this came to be, but it's kind of weird. You're making some kind of weird comeback on the program. All of a sudden, you're in front of me, front and center again, Blaze. And I'm not really sure why that is. Give me an A or give me an F. Blaze, I'm going to get me a hashtag Waitress Perkins. Signed, Woods Baldrick. C-minus, Blaze. C-minus. At Kevy1021 tweets, Eclipse Solar. Seems right to me. Signed, Mexter Danley. Jeff from the 919 tweets, damn, Tiger needs to take a course on social media. Learn how to hashtag Baldrick. Signed, Bill Belichick on Snapface.
Snapface.
You know the hoodie loves Snapface. He loves it. Nothing stays.
Instant shot.
Nothing stays there for more than a day. It just goes. It's not there forever. He loves Snapface. He resets every single day. That's how he approaches his life and his football team. He has to reset every single day. That's why the hoodie likes Snapface. With Snapface, you have to reset every single time. It'll be up there for a little while if you see it, and then it's gone. That's the beauty of Snapface, eh, William?
Snapface.
David Cutcliffe joins me when we come back. Next segment. But first, I have got a sports update for you. Busy, busy Tuesday. Let me dial you in. Here it is. David Cutcliffe's coming up momentarily. Duke head football coach. Some unfinished business on social. Going back to the Dante Fowler take, Sean Hester ESQ tweets, jungle drunk here. Wreck my glasses, punch me in the face, I can deal with it. Throw my booze in a lake and you end up on the IR. Kid Stupendous tweets, his reaction seems pretty lame or tame. It's not like the dude spilled a drink on him, signed the murdering tight end. Reality TV ban, also on that same topic. Fowler is my kind of guy. I treat my nephews the same way. Regards, Uncle Hart. Ooh, the karate guy in Maine is also taking some. Kid Stupendous took a run at him, too. Run anyone that starts out saying that he's a 37-year-old martial or 37-year martial artist. Mike D for three tweets. Rack Karate Kid in Maine. Any Taekwondo nerds want to weigh in? Fang Fox tweets, tell Purple Belt at the YMCA after school program to stop watching those old kung fu movies and get ground in real life. Benny and Wisco, my karate black belt is proudly displayed on the mantle right next to my homeschool PhD. Like I said, karate guy in Maine is taking some. As promised, we're joined right now by the head football coach at Duke. He is entering his 10th season there. He was the 2013 National Coach of the Year, Coach of the Year Award winner in both the SEC and the ACC. He led Duke to bowl games in four of the last 5 years. Duke opens up against North Carolina Central September 2nd. David Cutcliffe is my guest. David, good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim. I am doing well, and I heard the black belt part, so are you a preview fight on Saturday night? Is that what is happening?
Yeah, exactly. They're going to have me fight on the undercard, David, because there's no shortage of people that want to punch me in the face. But I'm not going to be there, but I'll be watching it for sure. And I appreciate you taking that all in. Let me start here. You talked about how this might be the most talented and deepest team that you've had during your time at Duke. You've got some youth as well. So what have you seen in fall camp in terms of how close that talent is to taking the next step?
Well, we've been kind of just that. We have shown incredible sparks. Some longer than others, but 42% of our scholarship roster are either redshirt freshmen or true freshmen. So I'm not going to say inconsistent, but not as consistent as we would like. But this team can run. It's very deep as opposed to teams we've had here in the past. So I like the competition. That's been good for us.
David Cutcliffe joining us. You've always struck me as somebody who's incredibly self-aware. As an example, I would say this. You're coming off a season where things didn't necessarily go according to plan, and one of the things that you said is that you probably could pick 10 reasons why it didn't go well. Quote, but the biggest one, and I mean this sincerely, is that I didn't have our team as ready as it needed to be, end quote. So what do you mean by that? And when you look back on last season, how does that impact the way you approach this season?
Well, it's impacted it a great deal. What I think I did a poor job of was maturing our team. I think I took for granted that our team understood how to deal with adversity, that we had enough older people. I liked our captains, but we really didn't grow our team and mature it as we should have. I shouldn't say we. I take full credit for that. I put the practice schedule together, the approach, et cetera. And I just didn't think our team handled adversity very well, particularly early. That falls right on the head coach. So we have been through, I would call it a grind. And I intentionally have put them under a great deal of adversity. And to be honest with you, probably the staff doesn't love me right now. But that's okay. Hopefully we're doing everything we can to have ourselves prepared.
Duke head football coach David Cutcliffe joining us. Now, that said, it was not that long ago that kind of season that you had last year was pretty much the norm at Duke. As an example, before you arrived, the school had not won 5 games in a season or been to a bowl game since 1994. So what does that tell you about how far the program has come?
Well, I love the expectations, and, you know, I think I certainly wasn't the only one around here disappointed. I know that many of our fans, and I loved it. I mean, they were irritated, and isn't that a great sign, as you just said? But I think most importantly, our staff, which is the same group of men coming back, our team, many of those guys that are coming back, I think we were probably as disappointed as you could think to be. And they're hungry. I like that. You know, we got to, as I said, become more consistent. It's not enough to be hungry. You have to be hungry and good. And that's kind of been our theme.
And there is talent on the roster. And one of the talented players on the roster is quarterback Daniel Jones. He accounted for more than 3,300 yards and 23 touchdowns as a redshirt freshman. How does he look to you now as he gets ready for his second season as the starter?
Well, he's much better. He's a better physical specimen. So at every aspect, running, throwing, he's stronger. And then it's daylight and dark. You know, he came into last year's fall practice expecting to be the number three quarterback. And suddenly he's thrust into starting. And he actually really responded incredibly well. He's really poised, really bright. And I've been really pleased with him. He's not where we think he's going to be by any means, and he knows he's got things he's learning daily. We had a nice little lesson out there this morning. He probably, again, wasn't all that pleasant from a standpoint of the lessons, but I just see this guy's got talent, and we need to help him reach his potential.
Duke head football coach David Cutcliffe is joining us once again. Now, you recently have been tweeting out pictures of your former Duke players in the NFL. What does it mean to you to see them meeting up with each other in preseason games? And then how much pride do you and the program take in that?
Well, I love that. I think we had one or two when we came in that were in the league, and now we've got 15, 16 on rosters that I think have great chances of being there on opening day. Some of them certainly will be, and some guys that are draft choices, some guys. You know, I think maybe, Jim, I'm as proud of this as anything. We have an incredibly high number of free agents in the National Football League, and that should tell people something about the type people they are, the habits they develop while they're here, and that's been something we're very proud of.
You know, I had Harold Landry from Boston College on the show earlier today, and we talked about the fact that on one recruiting visit from BC, one of his dogs bit an assistant coach. Now, you've got a million stories like that probably, but I know one in particular, when you were an assistant in Tennessee, you made a home visit to a recruit and a cockroach was crawling up your leg. How did
that
come
right.
about, and what's going through your mind when that happens?
Well, it wasn't just a singular cockroach. Okay. It was multitudes. This was a house much like I grew up in, and we had all of a sudden 19-degree weather in this small, small house down in the deep south. And they had a space heater going in there. And so I'm sitting on a couch, it's a nice piece of furniture, but it's covered in plastic to protect the cloth. And I'm starting to sweat. And every bug in that neighborhood has come into that warmth. And they are now crawling up my pants leg. I'm trying not to look at them, you know, because they're on the floor, they're on this particular piece of furniture. And I'm the only one there. I felt like I was in a Richard Pryor story, if you know anything about Richard Pryor. I didn't know where Miss Rudolph or who was getting ready to come out the back room and put some voodoo on me. But that was maybe the worst one by far. And by the way, I wished I would have been in Harold Landry's house and bitten by his dog. I would have taken that to get Harold Landry, believe me.
Yeah, right. Good, good,
we
dude.
Tried
a great,
hard.
Great player. Yeah, he's something else. You know, so then it comes to recruiting then. It's changed over time for sure. So how much has recruiting changed over the time you've been in the game? Is it pretty much the same as it's been, or do players and their families have different expectations now?
Well, it's completely different because of the internet, social media, recruiting services, the awareness that we start way too early, which, you know, I think is not healthy for young people. It's not even healthy for parents that haven't been through this before. I'm a little frightened by the trend of legislation because these are people that really aren't living it day to day. And it's drastically changed. And so we see in a lot of sports, they're trying to go back the other way in some of the Olympic sports. They have found that they're committing people as 9th and 10th graders. The other day, I had another sport here ask me to talk to one of their prospects, their top prospects, and the youngster was a 2021 graduate.
Wow.
I couldn't even do the math on that one for a minute. You know, okay, what grade, you know? And so I think that we need, it's young people's lives. These are big time decisions. And what I would tell them is the same thing I would tell any coach. You need to find places that fit the value system you have. You need to find places that really fulfill your personality and your purpose. It's a serious decision. And I hate all these early, early, early commitments, to be honest with you.
David Cutcliffe joining us, and I'm sure you would tell me also that it's not an easy fix, and that's something we can pick up at some other point. Before I let you go, though, I want to ask you about Eli Manning and the fact that back in April, Manning and most of the Giants receivers, their tight ends, their running backs, came to Duke for their annual training camp. You supervised those workouts, so what kinds of things do you and Eli work on at this point in his career? In other words, are they big picture things or maybe small things about football and tiny details in mechanics?
Well, a lot of it starts with mechanics. We study, you know, all of us, you know, after a period of time, we're a product of our habits. And if you get in a certain habit at quarterback, it can consume you. And so we look, I always, before he comes in for about a week, I watch a bunch of their tape very closely. I make cut-ups. He and I sit down with that. And then I ask him what he wants to accomplish with his receivers. We go through all of those guys, backs, tight ends, what we have to do to make it better, timing, trust. communication between the two to where they can throw the ball, and he knows exactly what to expect. That's a big thing in our world that we've done for 30 years in the passing game. It's an interesting sport. Receivers and quarterbacks do communicate, but it's completely nonverbal. It's all body language and even really kind of the mentality of a clock, a mental clock. I love it because that's the pure parts of coaching. I get to do that for a week with them. And by the way, he's healthy, or at least he was then. I mean, he's had to battle some things that he privately and keeps quiet, but he's healthy. He looked tremendous. And I thought those guys worked with a hunger. I've checked with him via text. We're both in camp, but he feels like that attitude has stayed there with them. He's excited about the way they're going about their work, and that's good to hear.
You know, a final thought, and I've got about a minute left, but that mention of hunger. I mean, this is a guy with two Super Bowl rings and nearly 50,000 passing yards. He doesn't have to do the kind of work that he does in the offseason with you. What's it say about him that he does?
Well, he is an amazing – the family. Let me just start with Archie and Olivia. But, you know, it's you never get satisfied. I mean, he loves to compete. And if you're a true competitor, you want to be your best. And I'm going to tell you now, I pray he stays healthy. He's throwing the ball better right now. His strength, his quickness – his hand quickness, all of those things we work on are just absolutely on fire right now. I was really happy for him when he was in here, and I just pray that he can be protected and stay healthy and it all works out. He's got some good players around him in that skill position. I don't know a lot about their line, but they've got some people right now.
He is the head football coach at Duke. He's entering his 10th season there, and Duke is going to open up against North Carolina Central on September 2nd. David Cutcliffe, my guest. David, so good to get caught up, and always nice to visit with you. Thanks so much for it.
Jim, you're always welcome to make a stop in at Duke anytime.
I'd love to do that, Coach. I'd love to do that. A college visit. I've got a soon-to-be college-age kid. I may take you up on that, Coach. David Cutcliffe, my guest. Got to wrap this thing. Summer heat can cause your battery fluids to evaporate. Get your battery tested for free. And if it needs to be replaced, the professional parts people will help you find that battery that you need at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. My thanks to Duke head coach David Cutcliffe. We missed on Chad Bettis. I'll try and reset that for you. Harold Landry also came through in hour number two. Great interview there. If you missed any of this, make sure you check out the Daily Jungle. And remember, we drop a brand new podcast next week with exclusive content separate from what you hear on this show. So keep that in mind. My thanks to the XR4TI crew doing their thing. You clones for listening. Check you tomorrow. We are out.